From KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations and affiliates nationwide. The Navajo Nation currently has the highest rate of per capita cases of COVID-19 infection in the United States. The pandemic has hit Indian country hard, and it's struggling with a lack of resources and staff. A young Navajo teenager went viral recently with his clear and devastating description of how the coronavirus was ravaging his nation within the framework of the history of colonization.
I'm probably the only Native American that has come up on your For You page, so listen up. I'm Navajo. I live on the Navajo Reservation. Currently on the Navajo Reservation, there are more than 1,200 cases and more than 50 deaths. The Navajo Reservation spans 27,000 square miles more than West Virginia. If the Navajo Nation were considered a state, we would be ranked number 3 in the nation, right behind New Jersey and New York. West Virginia is living on 163 grocery stores, while my nation is living on 13. West Virginia also has 63 hospitals, while my Navajo Reservation is living on 6. Today, Native Americans are being left out of the U.S. data count on positive coronavirus cases and being labeled as other. Native American. Today, we live on broken treaties and broken promises from the U.S. government. There are more than 500 Native American tribes in the U.S. today, and we are all told to share $8 billion in relief fund. This is America.
And that's the voice of a Navajo teenager named Jojo Jackson, whose TikTok video about COVID-19 in his community has gone viral. My next guest places the current pandemic plaguing Indian country within the framework of colonization and the history of European germ warfare that devastated tribal nations. Jade Begay is Dene and Tasique Pueblo of New Mexico. She is also the creative director of the NDN Collective, an indigenous-led organization dedicated to building indigenous power. And her new article in Yes Magazine is called What Indian Country Remembers About Survival. Welcome to the program, Jade.
Hi, thank you so much for having me.
So the statistics are really troubling, especially in the Navajo Nation. And we're seeing, as the young gentleman just said in this viral video, a very small amount of money being given by the U.S. government for a very large number of tribes and a very large population spread out across the country that's hit very hard. To you, does the U.S. government's response remind you of the history of how the U.S. government has treated Indian country historically?
Yeah, I think, what we're seeing is the U.S. respond in inadequate ways. And, prior to receiving this fund, this $8 billion, the way the federal government handled the entire the issue of COVID-19 and really delaying in responding has put so many communities, not just indigenous, but particularly marginalized communities, Black and Brown communities, at really great risk of the spread of COVID-19. It started there, and ever since we've just been seeing these continued failures for the federal government to support our communities in the best way. And I think one of the most egregious acts has been recently in the state of South Dakota with Governor Kristi Noem demanding that the Ogallala Sioux tribe and the Cheyenne River tribe take down their checkpoints that have been keeping their community safe. She is, really just basically violating tribal sovereignty and undermining tribal leadership in wanting to take those checkpoints down so that, South Dakota economy can continue as business as usual.
Your article begins by saying, in Indian country, there is a collective experience known as blood memory. Can you expand on that? What do you mean by that?
Sure, yeah. So blood memory is an experience, if you will, of trauma, or in some cases, you know, resiliency and strength passed down genetically or from family to family member, from ancestor to, you know, a newer generation. And, you know, we talk about this in our communities because it's a very real experience. You know, a lot of our grandparents have gone through really horrible systems, like boarding school systems, or you know, sterilization, forced sterilization, these types of acts of colonization, and that trauma is held in the body, and it's said to be passed down. And this is something that newer generations are now talking about, on how we heal that ancestral trauma, that blood memory, and how we acknowledge it, so that we can heal from those wounds of colonization.
And it's quite amazing, just as an aside, scientific research is now showing that we do carry a genetic memory, and that trauma can actually pass through generations. The history of the history of colonization here in North America, unfortunately, has this terrible legacy of genocide by essentially germ warfare, maybe partly indirectly, but partly directly. I should say partly deliberately and partly maybe through ignorance or negligence. But how important is that history? The fact that when European colonizers and settlers came to this continent, the diseases they brought with them were diseases that Native communities did not have immunity to, and that just wiped out huge swaths of the indigenous population.
Right. Yeah, that's totally correct. And when we're talking about COVID, this article I wrote came out in early March, as COVID-19 was really, the impact of it was really being felt across the country, and cities were just beginning to place stay-at-home orders and really take action around the pandemic. And we saw that as a moment to really try and ground our community, because we didn't really know what was going to happen. We didn't really know how states and the US were going to continue to respond. So we really wanted to create a piece that centered our community, our indigenous community, in you know, our realities, and also in our spiritual practices, so that we can, you know, go through this process with some sort of feeling of centeredness and groundedness. But we wanted to acknowledge that piece around ancestral trauma, around blood memory, around how our ancestors, you know, were impacted by germ warfare, and that if certain people are feeling, you know, in heightened anxiety, heightened grief, heightened fear, heightened anger at this time, it could be related to that experience of ancestral trauma, and this pandemic could be triggering that for our people, especially. So that's why we mentioned it, and why we feel like it's an important thing to acknowledge, that history and that reality.
Let's talk about responding to the pandemic. Unfortunately, the quintessentially American the colonizers' attitude toward health is one of individuals, centering the individual, you know, every person for themselves. And what's really needed when we talk about public health in the face of an infectious disease is a sense of collectivity, a sense of collective health, a sense of the importance of public health. So how does that play out in Indian country, within communities, within Native American communities? The actions of the Sioux tribes in South Dakota that you mentioned sounded like they were taking that seriously and protecting the entire community by setting up checkpoints.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, a lot of tribes have been doing that, asserting tribal sovereignty and really just setting up systems in place so that they can protect their small and often rural communities that have a huge lack of access to hospitals, to the resources needed that that they would need if an outbreak was to occur in their community. So a lot of tribes have been doing that preventative work, such as checkpoints, such as closing down roads into their communities, so that we don't have to have an outbreak, which would put any indigenous rural community, it would just be a huge strain on their community's resources. And on their communities' lives. A lot of our communities are home to elders, our knowledge keepers, and we really want to set up the right system so that those people are most protected.
Is that what you mean when you say we need to indigenize our communities in your article in Yes Magazine?
Partially, yeah. Definitely, we have to acknowledge, why it's so important to protect our elders. But the indigenizing piece also refers to what you mentioned about this idea of collective care, about community care, and not moving away from this, what I refer to as toxic individualism, like you mentioned, this, one man for themselves. We really need to be thinking about the whole, and who do we protect first? The elderly, the immune compromised, and how do we work collectively to make sure that, everyone is cared for, fed, and really checked in on throughout this whole thing. And NDN Collective has really doubled down on supporting community care across Indian country. We've developed in response to COVID-19 and the pandemic, we built a project called the NDN COVID-19 Response Project. It's a $10 million fund that we have been rapidly distributing across Indian country. At this point in time, we've awarded $2.3 million to more than 80 partners in 19 states. So with those resources, Indigenous communities, frontline organizations, frontline communities are able to expand their capacity and really support the communities with their own unique needs.
Now, the underlying health issues in many communities of color are making them vulnerable to COVID-19. We know, for example, African Americans are deeply vulnerable, are dying in higher rates than other demographics. And that's also true of Native communities, right? But those existing health conditions, health issues like diabetes and hypertension, aren't those also the generational consequence of centuries of colonization?
Absolutely. Not only that, but we're noticing now that the disparities in our health systems and IHS, Indian Health Services, are also being raised to the surface. That's a program that has been historically underfunded and underserved by the federal government. And we're really noticing that, when those programs have been forgotten, have been left behind in policy, it really plays out during these types of moments to our disadvantage, obviously. And Yeah, it's just building on this. Another issue we're starting to unpack is that often it's Indigenous communities, it's Black and Brown communities who are marginalized when it comes to environmental injustice and environmental racism. They're the communities that are being put, close to pollution or to different, oil refineries, coal mines. In Navajo, there's a lot of pollution from fracking and coal production. And that's also a contributing factor to people's health. So and puts them at risk, of course, for COVID-19. Air pollution is definitely, is a factor in all of this. So we want to make sure we're uplifting all of these things so that when we move into this new normal, we can continue to fight for justice for these frontline communities who, if we're able to stop fracking or coal production in Navajo Nation, then maybe we can, create better health circumstances for our communities too.
In your Yes Magazine article, you write about the Lummi tribe, a coastal Pacific Northwest tribe, and how their autonomy that they declared years ago has actually given them an edge on surviving this pandemic. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, of course. So I'm new to learning about the Lummi tribe, but in what I do know, very impressed by the Lummi tribe and what they've been able to accomplish during this pandemic. So many years ago, the Lummi tribe has declared tribal self-determination, meaning that they do not work with federal systems like IHS, for example. So they have their own medical program. And what this has allowed them to do in relation to COVID-19 was that prior to the major outbreaks, they were able to start preparing and not wait necessarily on the go-ahead from IHS or from the CDC. They were able to really take things into their own hands and start preparing their community for a potential outbreak. And so what they did was they set up a field clinic to house potential patients who tested positive for COVID. They were able to just build capacity and have more nurses and doctors present to support their community if need be. And it was just an amazing example of what self-determination, what tribal sovereignty can do for a community during a time like this.
So do you hope that there, at least, we're in the middle of a pandemic, so not all tribes can consider doing what the Lummi have done in the short term. But we also today have more representation in Congress of Indian Country than before. 2018 saw two Native members of Congress, both women, elected to the House, which was just incredible that, it had been so, that we've had, that so much history had to pass before Native American women were elected to Congress. Do you hope that just even that tiny sliver of voice in what is a deeply flawed representative government can be lobbied to benefit in the short term, especially with this pandemic, for Indigenous communities, especially the Navajo Nation?
Yes. I actually want to uplift a town hall that NDN Collective and our partner Illuminative and Indian Country Today did, which included both Cherise Davids and Deb Halland, representatives from Kansas and New Mexico, respectively. they were both on that town hall. And I remember one of the things that both Charisse and Deb said during the town hall was just encouraging Native people to continue to run for office, that they need more people like us in those rooms and making those decisions. So there was a big emphasis from those two representatives on continuing to encourage Native people to, you know, get the training and run for office. They need that support. But I am hopeful with those two people in Congress right now. And I know Deb Haaland is working with other representatives, Democratic representatives in New Mexico.
Jade, I want to thank you so much for joining us today. We'll post a link to your Yes Magazine article from our website. Good luck to you, and thanks for being with us.
Thank you so much.
My guest has been Jade Begay. She is Diné and Tacique Pueblo of New Mexico. She is the creative director of the NDN Collective, an Indigenous-led organization dedicated to building Indigenous power. We've been discussing her new article in Yes Magazine. It's called What Indian Country Remembers About Survival. I'm Sonali Kohatkar. We're online at risingupatsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter, find our audio podcast on iTunes and Spotify.